Hello, listeners. Jordan here. I just want to let you know that you can listen to Nighttime early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Include it with Prime.
You are listening to Keep Canada Weird, a weekly weird news roundup by the Nighttime Podcast.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to the next Keep Canada Weird episode. If you're new here, in this ongoing series, my pal Aaron and I seek out and explore the more interesting Canadian news stories from the last week. In tonight's episode, Aaron and I are going to discuss a Nova Scotia man's quest to get his personalized license plate back, Jack Shit's benches, which have been popping up across BC, a pokey thief, and a broken snow globe in Newfoundland. So let's get into it. Aaron Airport, it's good to be back, connected with you, talking about weird stuff. How's it going over there?
Oh, it's going good. It's going good. Just ready to get weird tonight. Let's do it.
Yeah, for people who don't have the pleasure of viewing and are just listening, you have beautiful curtains behind you. Did you decorate that room yourself? It's kind of like a Celtic take on an American flag. I see like a tartan with stars under it.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, that was there when I bought this house and moved in.
Oh.
And I left it
up. That was probably a big part of the negotiation.
Yeah, I told the real estate agent that that needed to be written into the offer.
Okay.
That kitchen curtain. So,
good.
Yeah.
Well, good decision because it looks amazing behind you. What's new? What have you been up to?
Oh, this question again.
Well, you don't have to talk about like what in your life is going on or what have you done in your life, but just in general, what in the world has made you interested?
Oh, well, I'm still interested in Russia and Ukraine.
Okay.
I follow it very closely and deeply and obsessively. So now, like, you can always tell what's going on in somebody's life when you look at their suggested videos that pop up on YouTube. Mine is just all Putin.
They know you better than you know yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
But since we're on the topic of YouTube and pop culture, I think before we can get into anything tonight, we need to address the elephant in the room. Everybody who listens to this show, every single one of them, have been waiting for us to weigh in on the news story of our generation, the slap heard around the world.
Oh.
Let me just ask you, did you watch the Oscars?
I did not watch the Oscars. And in fact, I never do.
Yeah, I don't either. I sometimes I'll try to watch like the movie that won Best Picture or whatever, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I never watch the Oscars. I find it a disgusting show to begin with for all of its from its inception.
But for people who've had who didn't manage to catch the story of what happened, basically, Will Smith and his wife and I guess probably people that were in the movie with him were kind of sitting front row. Chris Rock, the comedian, was presenting. And as the presenters will during the Oscars, Chris Rock was making jokes and he made a joke about Will Smith's wife, Jada Pinkett Smith. And the joke was something about like she's going to be in the movie G.I. Jane 2. The movie G.I. Jane 1 features a female actress with a bald head, like she had her head shaved because it's like an army movie. I would not have known this, but Jada Pinkett Smith, Will Smith's wife, has a medical condition that leads her hair to fall out. And it's something she's sensitive about. Mm-hmm. So she was sitting with Will and she's bald. So that joke that Chris Rock made about her being bald and maybe appearing in a reboot of G.I. Jane was enough to lead Will Smith to walk up on stage, approach Chris Rock, slap him across the face, which was a pretty big move. I think that's worse than a punch. And then as he's walking back to his seat, Will Smith is shouting, keep my wife's name out of your effing mouth. I think he said it three times.
Yeah, he was screaming it.
Yeah, it was pretty intense, but a pretty wild moment. In the Oscars, like, are the people there? They did nothing. They allowed him to get up on stage, smack someone, and exist.
That's the thing. Like, if it's a well-known celebrity walking up the steps, they're not really gonna, I mean, going forward they might, but they weren't expecting anything like that to happen.
But anyway, it was a wild moment. Do you think anything will happen to Will Smith for this?
Not in the long term, I don't think. But one thing that's happening is that nobody's going to talk about ever him winning the award.
Oh, yeah, it's certainly overshadowed that. And I think it will probably lead to him having a bit of a reputation of being a nut, because he, like, my perception of Will Smith, I've known him as like a really clean, like family friendly kind of entertainer. Like his music didn't have curses. He's generally in kind of like big budget, pretty clean movies. Like he wouldn't be in anything very racy. And then for this to happen is, and hearing him shouting at him and stuff, it just goes completely against his image.
Yeah. 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 He always had that nice guy impression, I guess, you know, for all of our lives, like you said. And
anyway, well, we had to address that. It's addressed. We can move on with our night. Let's move on. We got something else big we need to discuss before we can get into the news stories we're going to get into that we're going to talk tonight. We need to put a matter to bed that has been also the subject of a lot of emails and discourse. Is Aaron wrong? Is everyone else wrong? You received a death threat coming from Ellen in the United States. This all goes back to an ongoing issue you're having with the pronunciation or the spelling, I suppose, of rhesus, as in rhesus pieces. So before we go, and for people watching and listening, we're about to put this matter to bed.
Or but crack it even wider open.
I think it's going to be put to bed. But before we do, there is one voice memo I got concerning this. Let me play that, and then we will get to what I think will be the final update in this saga. Here's the voicemail we received.
Hey, Jordan. This voice memo is in regards to your Keep Canada Weird series and Aaron's big debate on Reese peanut butter cups. My brain just will not allow me to call them anything else but Reese. Like Reese's? Reese's? It just doesn't flow for me. Maybe it's a Cape Breton thing.
So that is someone who agrees with you. Again, the issue up until this point is it Reese? Is it Reese's? If it is Reese's, is it okay to say Reese? Then I got a message. This came to me not as a voice memo, but just as a text-based message through my Facebook account for Nighttime Podcast. Here's what it says. Hi, Jordan and Aaron. I've been listening to the Keep Canada Weird show and enjoy it very much. I was grocery shopping yesterday, and I happened to see a package of Reese ice cream, and I said to myself, maybe Aaron is right. And then today I was listening to your most recent show, and I saw Aaron was yet again under fire for his understanding of Reese versus Reese's. And I had to go back to the grocery store to take some photos to show you what the brand actually looks like. Clearly, both Reese and Reese's are correct, depending on the product. And the person who wrote this message is Sandra Gates. And Sandra was kind enough to send me a collection of photos of various Reese products. And what I see as I flip through the products is that the company seems to use both brands. So they have Mix Reese, which is like a bag of different kinds of things. Reese's Pieces has the apostrophe S. They have Reese ice cream, which doesn't have the apostrophe S. They have Klondike bars that are Reese flavored, which is R-E-E-S-E. They have Reese's Puffs, which has the apostrophe S. So it seems all over the place. And like Sandra says in her message, it appears to me that both are acceptable. I took the step to actually write to the company to see what the deal is with their branding. Is it two separate companies, or is there any rhyme or reason for how they use the branding? And at the time that we're on air, I've yet to receive a response, and I likely won't. But I think, Aaron, for you, I think this is a bit of redemption, because it shows at least what you say is acceptable.
I made the argument that I'm kind of right, and I was kind of right.
And I think Ellen, who is responsible for the initial death threat that brought this whole thing up, I think she'll be listening to this. Is there anything you want to say to her?
I want her to apologize. the same way that Will Smith did to Chris Rock after the slap heard around the world. Will Smith issued an apology after the fact, and I want one too, and I want it played on air, live.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's get into the weird Canadian news of the week. As typical, we have a mixed bag. The way I summarized this episode is we have the story of grabber's plates. We have a pokey thief. We can talk about jack shit in his benches.
Yeah.
And we have an amazing archival video from Newfoundland that I've had a hard time finding the original source of, but it's amazing and I still want to play it and talk to you about it. To start, maybe we should start with the plaques, perhaps.
Yes, the Jack Platts plaques.
The Jack shit plaques. And this is when several listeners of the Keep Canada Weird series have notified me of this story out of British Columbia. And I see why. It's quite weird and kind of funny. So I'm going to read you from a CBC article that summarizes the story. This is an article from March 24th, and the headline is Plaque Prank or Humorous Memorial. It's fair to say we don't know Jack. So here we go. We didn't know Roland Shit had a brother on the West Coast, but sadly it appears Jack recently passed away. But those who claim to have known him are busy marking his memory. A series of signs intended to look like plaques have been placed on dozens of benches across British Columbia in recent weeks, memorializing a person whose last name is Shit, spelled S-C-H-I-T-T, with the first name Jack. The plaques, which include a crude tagline, also feature a QR code that links to a Facebook page showing all of the locations the plaques have been placed. And it says the plaques include a crude tagline. The tagline is, he was an asshole, but he was a funny asshole. So I'm going to continue to read onto the article. From scenic lookout points in Lillooet to Vancouver's Stanley Park, from ski hills in Vernon to sidewalks next to Victoria's Empress Hotel, the plaques have been clandestinely placed throughout the province over the past 2 months. But it does not appear the memorials to Mr. Shit were approved by any bylaw officials. Now they're quoting someone. I don't know anyone that issues a permit for a prank, but if you mean we are okay with it, do we tolerate these sorts of stickers on benches? Well, the answer is no, wrote Bill Eisenhower, head of engagement for the city of Victoria. We've already dispatched city crews to remove any that still remain, and we've alerted our colleagues at the Greater Victoria Harbour Authority, as a couple of those pics appear to be on their property.
I like your impression of this guy. Hey, everybody, don't put those plaques there, okay? That's my bench. That's not your bench. That's rude.
On Mr. Shit's Facebook page, there is a post explaining the purpose of the project. Jack is dearly loved and missed by all. He lived his life fully and made it his life and now his legacy to make people laugh. He believed that if we all took ourselves less seriously, we could all live a happier life, it reads. He wanted to meet as many people as he could in life, and that way he could honestly tell them that they knew Jack Shit. But there remains the distinct possibility that the memorial is, in fact, a prank. CBC News messaged the Facebook page to ask if the tributes were a marketing campaign or a joke, but didn't receive a reply. Online phone directories show no record of anyone named Shit in the province. And the BC Coroner Service said they have no record of any investigation into the death of someone with the last name Shit, spelled S-C-H-I-T-T. In recent days, the people behind the project have pivoted to putting the plaques on a more symbolically apt structure, porta potties. And then the article ends with a whole bunch of photos of these plaques stuck to porta potties. So yeah, I don't know what that is. It's some kind of like, it's not like a guerrilla marketing campaign. It's just a weird prank, I guess.
So there is no jack shit. And see, that's the thing. I don't know how I see this now. Like, yeah, it's like it's on the cusp of being a clever joke, but not quite there yet.
Well, I think of, you know, the whole thing with, oh, what were they called? The tall metal structures that appeared everywhere. And they kind of went.
Oh, yes, right.
I can't think of what they were called, what people were called.
Yeah, they were monoliths or something. Yeah.
They, it's like that kind of started off silly, but then it kind of took off. Mm-hmm. This is something that, like, it's silly, but I could see it taking off just because it's fun. And if there's a Facebook group with a map and stuff, people would want, you know, their town to be on that map. I could see that being something that catches on. I think I'm all for a project that is, that seeks to make things a bit more interesting and doesn't really harm anyone. That said, putting stickers places, if they're not easily removed on people's property, that's, yeah, I don't know if I could support that, but they're definitely making an attempt at a fun and funny thing.
Yeah, the attempt is there. There's some thought into it, but I just don't think they quite flushed it out properly.
The one thing that I could see making this catch on is other people wanting to put the stickers up in their hometown to get their town on the, you know, the jack shit map. But
I don't know. Again, it's almost funny. It's almost
It's almost there.
I don't like the tagline. I think that's what's kind of hanging me up about it.
The jack shit. He was an asshole.
But a funny asshole. Yeah.
Well, I guess the kind of background story they're coming up with was it was this guy that died, and this was like kind of their way of memorializing him. If he was a real person, then that would be a really cool story.
I think that's the only way that it works is if he's real.
Yeah.
And now we don't know if he's real.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. If he was a real person who liked making people laugh, and when before he died, he told his friends, like, I got this idea, do this, then that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But if they just came up with it, I agree with you. I give it a 3 out of 10 if they came up with it, a 9.5 out of 10 if it's true story.
If it's real. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, let's move on to, you want to get into some Canadian crime?
Yeah, I do, actually. Okay. Talking about it and committing it.
Let me run our intro, and then we'll get to it.
Okay.
This week in Crime in Canada.
Aaron, have you ever been ripped off buying something online?
No.
I've never been, like, truly burned, but I've had, like, disappointing things or things arrive not quite as described that almost made me feel like ripped off. But the story we're going to get into now, it's out of Vancouver, BC, and it is straight up the story of an online, like, scammer thief. But what makes it interesting is the whole story and the crime, it centers around valuable Pokemon cards. And my oldest son is into Pokemon cards, so I kind of understand the economy that surrounds the collection of rare and collectible Pokemon cards. They can be really expensive. And I guess anything that's, you know, expensive and commonly traded is going to be prime for someone to use this as a way to separate someone from their money fraudulently. Let me read you this this article. Actually, before I read you the article, do you know anything about Pokemon? Do you like these things?
I know that it exists, and, you know, I know about Pikachu.
Okay, I think we missed it. Like, it came out after we were, I kind of remember first hearing about it, and I think I was, you know, like 15 or something by then, so I was probably too old for it.
Yeah, I see. It was definitely well on the tail end of I was not the demographic they were originally aiming for, but, you know. I know it's out there. I don't follow it or watch it or do anything with it, but
All right. Well, let's hear about how they play into Canadian crime. So the headline of this CTV News article is BC man ordered to pay hundreds after not delivering collectible Pokemon cards to buyers. A man who sells collectible Pokemon cards has been ordered to pay more than $1,300 to two customers who say they didn't get the cards they paid hundreds of dollars for. A civil resolution tribunal decision posted online Wednesday said Andrew Jones in Jalzadeh Cabini submitted claims against Zachary Hall after purchasing cards from him last year. The two men told the tribunal they paid for specific cards, but either received sport cards or Pokemon cards that were worth no more than a few dollars instead. Hall, however, tried to have the complaints dismissed, saying the allegations weren't true. He instead accused them of trying to make a quick few bucks, according to the tribunal member Eric Ragar's decision. And now they get into the kind of the facts of the story. Jones, which is one of the alleged victims, Jones' transaction began with an initial sale in early May. Jones bought several cards from Hall and received what he ordered, Ragar wrote. The two used an intermediary to complete the transaction. And I wonder what that intermediary could have been. Could have been like eBay or Amazon.
Yeah,
or
some third party kind of, you know,
situation. So the two used the intermediary to complete the transaction, but weeks later, on June 8th, Jones and Hall agreed to another sale. In this case, Jones paid $975 for six specific Pokemon cards and paid by e-transfer, rather through the intermediary, which was probably, again, like PayPal or something. And then over the next several days, Jones asked Hall multiple times if the cards had been sent, and on June 15th, Hall sent the package. The tribunal heard that Jones was beginning to get suspicious by this time after finding Facebook posts where it seemed as though Hall sold the same cards to other people. He also reportedly unsent some of his message history with Jones. Oh, like, you know, in Facebook, you can unsend a message.
Delete. Yeah, yeah.
That's always a little sketchy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he sent them on June 15th. On June 21st, the package arrived. By then, Mr. Jones believed that Mr. Hall had scammed him, so he took a video of himself opening the box, an unboxing video. The package included only a basketball card and a baseball card. There were no Pokemon cards in the package at all. So that's the first scam. Now we're going to go into the second person involved, and this is last name Cabini. I'm likely pronouncing that wrong. But Cabini's transaction with Hall happened at about the same time. On June 13th, Cabini agreed to pay $260 for a valuable Pokemon card. Instead, when his package arrived, there were several Pokemon cards that he said were worth a few cents or maybe a dollar each. Cabini said when he tried to contact Hall, the seller didn't respond. In the decision, the lawyer, or the judge, Ragar, said Hall's responses were difficult to follow and didn't address the primary issue in the dispute. Much of Mr. Hall's evidence is about past customers who've been happy with their purchases. And I find that this is irrelevant to whether Mr. Hall sent the right cards to these applicants for the purchases at issue in the dispute. He told the tribunal Cabini and Jones may have gotten the wrong cards because of a mix-up with the mail. However, he never explicitly says that he sent the right cards to either applicant, although he does describe their accusations as false. It is unclear, however, whether the denial is about their allegation that they received the wrong cards or that their allegation that Mr. Hall is a scammer. But ultimately, the judge determined Cabini and Jones had proven their claims. Jones, in particular, had video evidence that he didn't receive what he paid for, which the judge called a smoking gun. While Cabini didn't have a video, the judge wrote that the photo evidence likely shows what he received, adding that Hall's failure to respond to his messages were telling. Hall was ordered by the courts to pay Jones a total of $1,115.30, which covers damages and CRT-related fees, court fees. To Cabini, he was ordered to pay $260.88, nearly all of which was to cover damages. Mr. Hall's failure to provide an explanation of what happened or to explicitly deny the applicant's allegations suggests he knows he sent the wrong cards, whether it was on purpose or not, the judge wrote. So I think that's a pretty textbook case of someone trying to make a few dirty dollars and getting busted.
Yeah, it seems to me like that only works if you do it once. And I don't know, like... Is it really worth it to be
couple hundred bucks?
Yeah, like for the minimal payoff that this person is getting by ripping, sending hockey, you know.
No, Pokemon cards. Oh, no, sending hockey instead.
You send hockey cards instead. Yeah, like what?
Yeah, but how many people, for the sake of a couple hundred bucks, how many people are going to do more than send him a bunch of messages? Like, if these two people came forward and actually went to the, you know, the courts about it, I'm sure there's, you know, there's more victims that just didn't take the time to do it. And maybe this guy's really hard up for money and has, you know, got away with it once or twice, so he did it again. The other thing, too, they didn't name the intermediary, but I used to do a lot of, like, buying and selling stuff on eBay. And the way eBay would work is if you make sales through eBay, like someone buys a product you're listing on eBay and pays through PayPal, which is like eBay's promoted banking service, your purchase is kind of protected and insured in some ways through these companies. And also when you're buying through eBay in a lot of the similar services, you have, there's like a dispute resolution process where eBay can get involved, and you can also leave bad feedback so future buyers and will see the flags that are the red flags associated with the specific seller. So you have a bit more recourse. But if you then take a sale off of eBay and off of that platform and just do it through Facebook Messenger and e-transfer and stuff, you're completely on your own. So if this guy is shady and wanting to scam people by getting them off of the primary platform and just doing it through Messenger and e-transfers and stuff, yeah, I bet you could get away with that a lot before someone takes the steps to actually take you to court over, you know, $700 or whatever.
But yeah, I'm glad maybe. These people I did. I would just think, like, as a, I don't know, it's just such a type of scam that easily leads back to you. Mm-hmm. And if you do it enough, like, you know, you could, someone's eventually going to say something or pursue legal action, or, you know, like in this case, it just seems low hanging fruit. Why waste your time? Like, figure out a different scam.
Yeah. But people do, like, scams that will eventually lead back to you, but you just have a little bit of time to get away with it. Like, there's a lot like that that people will still do. People are just, if someone's desperate and stupid, or they just can't resist, you know, taking someone's money. I don't know. Like, it said, like, the messages were going unanswered when the second complainant was writing them, like, you sent me the wrong stuff. I wonder if this guy who was doing it, if he thought, I'm just going to block them and not respond to their emails and I'll get the $600. I love to see someone shady like that get taken down, though. Mm-hmm. That's what I liked about this article. It's like, good.
Yeah. It is good that they got just some justice in there.
All right. Well, let's get on to the next story. We got a few to choose from here. We can go through the saga that I've got. Again, this is one that I've got a lot of requests for, and I'm glad to finally get it over with and have the story be done, is the story of Grabber's Plate.
Yeah.
Or we can look at the this piece of video and audio from Newfoundland that I wanted to tell you about. You got a preference here?
Yeah, let's end on the video. We usually do.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. And the video is hilarious, so it's a perfect...
it's a good send-off.
Nightcap send-off, yeah. So let me ask you this. I think everybody in the country has seen the photo of the unhappy-looking man holding a license plate, a Nova Scotia license plate that says, grab her.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, like, before we decided to talk about this tonight, did you follow this story?
See, you know, articles about it over the course of the history of the story. So I would see random updates here and there, and just the entire time I'm wondering, why does he care? Mm-hmm. Why is he fighting so hard to get his last name on a plate?
So this is a saga that has been going on now almost 5 years to the day, because actually I have the first article written about it. It was the first article, like, where this story first came out is March 23rd, 2017. So that's when it started. And I'll read you a couple of the articles to get people caught up, but I think a lot of people in Nova Scotia would know this story. It's basically a story that surrounds a Nova Scotia man who had a vanity plate, which is like a license plate for your car that has, rather than like the random license plate number, it would have like a word or whatever.
Yeah, he had his last name on. Personalized license plate.
Yeah, so he had a license plate, personalized plate for years. However, the government or the registrar or whatever that oversees the license plates took it away from him, and he has been fighting it for 5 years.
This is totally overwhelming. I mean,
Lauren Grabber says he can't believe the support he's received after the story about his license plate went worldwide. He has countless messages, emails, and phone calls from across North America and as far away as Moscow and Austria. The plate was pulled because of one complaint, with government saying some people could interpret it as promoting violence against women. Grabber says it's his last name, and he's proud of it. He bought the plate 25 years ago for his dad's 65th birthday, and it's been passed down through the family ever since. Grabber says he's so upset, he's considering legal action in an effort to get his plate back. His son has the same plate on his vehicle in Alberta. This weekend, he had a special sticker made for his car, pointing to the plate and saying, "It's my last name."
That article, again, was the situation when it first became public in 2017. And as I said, and I can't overstate that this is something that every like 3 months or so, for some reason, this story finds its way in the news because Lauren Grabber either filed a lawsuit against, you know, let's say the Department of Motor Vehicles. When that didn't work, he went against the province. That didn't work, so he appealed it. Then he went to the Supreme Court or whatever the province, and it's always been in the news. He's been on radio a lot. It's been a long running joke. And if any time there's an article about him, you just got to look at the comments, and there are half of the province seems to be saying this guy just needs to give it up and, you know, not have a license plate. That said, I do see his point. Before we get into the update, do you have an opinion on this guy's plate?
Yeah, I think from the moment this, we need to go back to 25 years ago when he first got the plate. Mm-hmm. And need to say to him, personalized plates are stupid.
And yeah,
then,
that's true.
And then end it there. Because yes, he's had it for, you know, all these years. Yes, it is his last name. But at the end of the day, personalized plates are stupid. So that's it.
But let me, so we've been talking about this issue with his license plate, and I told you the original story, but let me give you the current update. And I think a lot of Nova Scotians are going to be happy with this. Well, specifically the ones that are sick of hearing about it. So as I mentioned, Lauren Grabber has gone up through all levels of government. He lost the case to the top court in Nova Scotia. They wouldn't give him back his plate. He then appealed that. He lost that appeal. And then he presented his case to the Supreme Court of Canada, which is Canada's top court. And the way the Supreme Court works is they get you, you apply to them to hear your case. So you put it together and you send it to them. They will review it and decide if that's a case they want to, you know, hear and make a decision on. They don't give an explanation as to why they do or don't take a case. The headline of the article that just came out, this is March 17th, so a little over a week ago. The headline is, "The Supreme Court of Canada won't hear the appeal of Nova Scotia man Grabber's license plate case."
It's a battle that's been fought for over 4 years. Can a last name on a license plate be considered offensive? Well, in part, it depends on what that last name is. But what if the last name has appeared on the license plate for nearly 30 years before being revoked? That's the case with Lauren Grabber, who had his name on a personalized license plate in Nova Scotia for 27 years. But then, after a single anonymous complaint in 2016, his plate was revoked. During the Supreme Court hearing last January, an expert witness testified that the license plate may be interpreted as support for violence against women, as it can be read as "grab her," and ultimately some may feel threatened by the plate. In the end, the Supreme Court agreed there's no constitutionally protected right to freedom of expression on a government-owned personalized license plate. But Grabber has not given up fighting for what he believes is his right. His lawyers argued that the appeal hinges on three factors. The protections under the charter apply to an individual's expression on a personalized license plate in Nova Scotia that interpreting an Austrian German name as objectionable English phrase and then censoring it infringes on the charter, and that the trial judge erred in finding that the name grabber promotes sexualized violence without providing any meaningful evidence.
There is no evidence of harm for 27 years. We have no affidavit evidence from anybody in Nova Scotia that they were harmed by this plate. The only harm that is contended is from an anonymous person.
The Crown, meanwhile, argued that license plates have never been a space for total freedom of expression. There's a format that limits the characters, the color, and size of a license plate. They also say that Grabber's charter rights were never violated and that he's still allowed to own a car, drive a car, and even have a personalized license plate, just not with his specific last name on it. The judges have reserved their decision in this case.
Well, let's get to the part of the show that I'm most excited about. So in the past, you remember a listener named Meg sent us the video from Kalgoorlie, Newfoundland of the rat dispute, mm-hmm. which was amazing. The rat lady, that whole thing. After I told Meg, I responded to her and thanked her for sending the video saying I hadn't seen that. It was amazing. And she said, well, if you didn't see that, there's this other video. that was on the news in Newfoundland. That is also amazing that you need to see. I watched it. I laughed. I watched it again, and I continue to laugh. I've probably watched it 20 times by now, and I've laughed a lot each time. But there's a bit of a background here because I've had a hard time figuring out a lot of the context because it's a video that was shot by a Newfoundland TV station called NTV that's only broadcast in Newfoundland, and it seems like it was broadcast maybe 7 or 8 years ago. But as far as I can tell, the background to this is I can't tell what store, but what it seems has happened is just around Halloween, a woman in Newfoundland bought a snow globe from a dollar store. So it could have been Dollarama, it could have been some other one. But I'm pretty sure the snow globe in question, because you see it in the news report, I'm pretty sure I've seen those for sale at Dollarama, which is a popular.
Yeah, it looks just like every Halloween snow globe that you get at any dollar store anywhere.
Yeah. So anyway, this woman has gone to the press in Newfoundland, gone to NTV, because she's unhappy because the snow globe that she bought was handled by her young grandson who was visiting her. The grandson, it broke very easily, and the grandson could have cut himself. She wants the dollar store to pull this product off the shelves, and she was on the news about it. And both her delivery and especially her grandson's comments on the whole incident are just amazing.
A woman in Mount Pearl has sounded the alarm over a possible problem with some Halloween snow globes being sold in the metro area. NTV's Fred Hutton has that story.
Alice Tulk likes to go all out for Halloween, decorating her house inside and out. This year, she bought a $2 snow globe from a local store, but has sounded the alarm after the snow globe exploded while her three-year-old grandson, Hunter, was playing with it.
It happened yesterday evening about just before lunch. Yeah. And he was just sitting there and he was looking at television and he picked up that little thing there and he went shake, and I just went and I was watching him because I was sitting down here and like I knew he didn't edit off anything as long as I was looking at him, and he picked it up and went to shake it like that, and when it did, it just poof. Just like that, it exploded.
I just see again and exploded everywhere. Like that. I'll tell you, exploded everywhere. The snow and the water and the glass.
This is what is left of the snow globe. While she's contacted the store, she knows there are others out there that have already been sold. She wants other people to know about the dangers.
My concern, it could happen to anyone, a child or a grown-up, really, because, I mean, first when I bought it, I took it and shook it. And I mean, nothing happened. And then I lodged it on the table. And when I, Chloe. And then I lodged it on the table. And I thought of it. And there he came yesterday and he sat down, he went to shake it and just took one like that and exploded. And like I said, the biggest concern, it could have went in his eyes.
Ms. Tull contacted the store where she purchased the snow globe and was told they will be taking them off the store shelves. She said she was also told other stores are also expected to do likewise.
Oh, Aaron, I don't know what I like more, if I like her version of what happened or the little guy, but both of them are amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the little guy's hilarious.
I tell ya, and he's so excited. Oh, the glass and the water. And the parts I like is every so often you just be lost for words and you go, huh.
He's so like, I find it takes time for like someone his age, it takes longer to take on the personality traits of the people around you, you know?
You can tell he spends a lot of time with his grandmother. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like, you can just tell that, like, he really talks exactly like her.
Yeah, he's like a 70-year-old Newfoundlander in a 5-year-old body sort of thing. Like,
yeah. It's like he's it's like he's reincarnated, you know, Jimmy Flynn or something.
Yeah.
I just say again and spilled it everywhere. I'll tell you, it exploded everywhere, the snow and the water and the glass.
I'm convinced every product at the dollar store is, you know, it would
going
barely
to kill you.
It's going to kill you or poison you. And but but this one, I think the fact that like it's one of those golden moments. You couldn't hire actors or writers to put together something that kind of captures a moment like that. Mm-hmm. You could never do that fictitiously. It has to be real. And that was just such a great moment to capture on news. And it really captures the essence of just the regular people in Newfoundland or in a lot of other places. It reminds me of Cape Breton as well. I know
any rural
a million
area,
people.
You know, like any rural area, anywhere kind of thing.
But those stories, this one somewhat, I wouldn't say it went viral, but I did find a video, a poor quality video of it on YouTube that had a lot of views. So it's a well-known video in Newfoundland, but I don't think around, you know, around the country, although people would probably enjoy it. But I think what that shows me is that there's a lot of like clips like this that people know in their own area. So anyone who is watching and listening that has like one of those crazy clips that really captures the essence of life in their community in a lighthearted and funny way, I'd love to hear from you, because that type of thing just makes me wild.
Oh yeah, it's it's funny. You want to just find this kid and just get him to talk about whatever, you know.
Yeah,
just record
I would talk
him
to
talking about anything.
Well, just like remember last week we played the guy who was wild about weather out of Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
This kid today is like a whole different version of that, but I would like to hear this kid talk about any issue or any kind of thing going on in his life, and I bet you it would be hilarious, just like that weather guy last week. I think every little thing would be comical.
I think the kid would be a good host for this show. Like, he could kind of come on as the third host.
What's it called when you have someone who's like out in the field doing work?
Oh, like
correspondent.
Yeah.
He would be a great correspondent. We could send him to like a grocery store and check out something for us.
He would have to be supervised, though. We need someone.
Yes, well, it'd be his grandmother, obviously.
Yeah, well, she better stay out of the way. It's all about the kid.
It's his show. Well, yeah, then again, that clip was like 7 years old. He's probably a teenager now.
Oh yeah, that's 7 years old. Or I forget the whole thing. Then we're not interested.
No, no.
You're too old. You're old news.
Yeah.
You're washed up.
Well, let's wrap this up. We have the country has 1 week to get weird. And if your part of the country gets weird, let us know about it, and we can talk about it next week.
Yeah.
Anything you want to go out on?
Let's just be excellent to each other.
And go get some Reese's Pieces.
Go get some Reese products at your local grocery store.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go out the way we always do. Aaron.
All right. Jordan.
Until next time.
When life gives you lemons.
Keep your name out of my mouth.
Make the lemons weird.
I want to thank you for joining Aaron and I in our Keep Canada Weird discussion. But before we part, I have some thanks. First, a big thanks to Aaron for sharing another evening with me and with you, the listeners of Nighttime. A big thank you to Monty Data for contributing the music for this episode, and Unicole for supplying the intro and outro narration. But the most important thank you goes to everyone who listens to Nighttime, as without your interest and your support, this show would be as pointless as it would be impossible. But with that said, keeping the show alive is and has always been an uphill battle. So if you want to help take a bit of weight off the show's back, make sure you're listening on the premium feed. Not only does it make the show possible, it'll give you more of each topic than you'll find here on the free feed, as I'm adding exclusive content regularly. So for about the price of a cup of coffee, support the show and give yourself more of it at patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. And on the topic of the premium feed, I want to thank the newest subscribers, Justin, Craig, Kel, and Melissa. Thank you for going premium. And for anyone else who'd like to support the show but can't do it with a premium feed subscription, you can give me a big hand by simply sharing this episode on social media and letting like-minded friends know what we're doing here. If you have any story ideas, if you want to give feedback on the show, or contribute a voice memo, you can do all that and more at nighttimepodcast.com/contact. And I hope to hear from you. But until then, take care of each other, hug your loved ones tight, and let me know if you see anything weird.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.
Beautiful, serene, majestic, the true North, strong and weird.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.